You're going to talk about reviewing. So I'm just going to ask our fabulous panelists to introduce themselves. My name is Amanda Mutal. I write reviews for NPR and Tor.com and Publishers Weekly. And I really like it. And I like to talk about the power of journalism reviewing. So if we want to start perhaps with John on my right, and just kind of move in this way. Everyone introduce themselves.
I'm John Poop. I've reviewed Altman in various places for many years, probably half a century now, and have a variety of opinions about the really complicated issues that are being addressed or spoken about here. So we will see whether any of them come up and whether or not I have anything I can say that's useful to me or useful to anybody else.
I'm Lila Garrett. I review for Strange Horizons and Publishers Weekly, as well as at my own blog. I do both reviews and what I consider criticism, and I do think there's possibly a difference that we can maybe go into.
My name is Alexander Yablokov. I have a story in the latest Osmos, probably not latest anymore. I review people's clothing and behavior in bars, people's poor parenting skills in grocery stores, and have been reviewed frequently myself, so I have some opinions about that.
Serious power differentials. My name is Gregory Wilson. I'm a professor of English at St. John's University in Queens, New York. I teach courses in fantasy and science fiction creative writing. Also an author, first novel a couple of years ago, next novel being turned into a graphic novel in October, and short stories in various places. And I'm on this panel, I think, for two reasons. Number one, I co-host a podcast called Speculate, the podcast for writers, readers, and fans, with Brad Bollier. And in fact, Amal and I were just talking about, she was like a guest on our first ever episode some years back. And since then, I've interviewed people like N.K. Jemisin and Pat Rothfuss, Brandon Sanderson, Brent Weeks, Kish Johnson, James Patrick Kelly, Mike Swanwick, a lot of others. And the other hat, reviewing-wise, is that I review for CurtainUp.com, which is one of the largest theater websites in the world, for about a decade now. So a number of shows in New York City, so I have the theater side of reviewing a little bit, you know, down on the panel, I suppose.
And I just have a question. I'm principally a composer of opera and classical music, and so my experience with reviewing is mostly from the music side of things. By day, I work with Sylvia Music USA, where we have a website called The Music Box that reviews recordings of classical music, and the need for those, and what the value they provide to the reader and to the artist is one reason that I'm interested in joining this session.
Thank you very much. That's actually completely fascinating to me. I wanted to begin with addressing what I thought was maybe a problematic premise in the panel description. I mean, so we're starting off just be leaping from the point of reviews are fucking weird, according to film crit Hulk. So, you know, the sterling authority that film crit Hulk is obviously provides us with our premise here. And so what the premise is saying is that there is a problem with reviewing that nobody seems to address because there's a power differential between the writer of the review and the reader of the review, where the writer of the review has access to more information than the reader and is performing this coy dance where you're trying to simultaneously talk about the thing that you've seen without revealing too much of the thing that you've seen. And I find that's very interesting, but at the same time, it's really only applicable to, you know, to the specific looking at film or book. It's not really as applicable to something like music, which you could talk about. So I'd love to get some insight on that in a bit. What I'd like to do first is just ask you guys to respond to that premise in your own way. What were your thoughts on this panel when you first saw the description? I think maybe I'll start with you because you said you were drawn to it for that reason. So how does that differ with music?
Well, for a lot of musicians, the review is a very, very big deal, particularly the New York Times review. What it says is not terribly important. And usually what it says is not a clear evaluation of the piece as such. Just recently, a professor of mine had an opera review to the Times. That's the statement that's important. What I say afterwards about the review is completely irrelevant. Hirsch opera, reviewed in the Times. That's a statement of a certain level of career achievement. And there are times where you sort of hope that the reviewer will choose consciously to drop of adjectives that you can carry with you forever.
With a lot of ellipses between the words, maybe.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah. And like, yeah. Kevin Clark is dot, 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 A, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what they're used for in a lot of ways. So, because everyone who's going to make a decision about whether or not to see the show you have on in New York for one night decided well before the review was ever written. So you're not going to help anyone with a purchasing decision in the same way you might with a show that has a longer run. And so also, like, the review is not written in this way that's trying to provide a lot of information to support a certain decision. The review is often written in such a way as to either provide a full quote or not. And that's the decision the reviewer has to make before they publish. Is, am I going to give you something, or do I feel you're not worthy of a clear, declarative sentence?
That is completely fascinating. So I'm curious then. You bring up the sort of the prestige of it.
Yeah.
What needs to happen? I mean, you say it's a career achievement, but then is it a statement at all of the quality of the piece that it got reviewed in the first place, or is it a statement of the hype around it or the people involved in it? What actually makes that happen?
It's supposed to be the first one. It's pretty much the third one.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. So that sounds completely fascinating. I'd like to come back to a whole bunch of things that you mentioned there, but I think we'll just keep moving down this way if you want to respond to the
yeah, I just want to say something about the ellipses point. I did a review of Basilica, which is a show, I guess 5-6 months ago, as an off-Broadway show, and the lead actor did a tremendous, tremendous job, incredible, searing performance. So I commented that the play had some problems, but, you know, he was great. So I said one of the pull quotes was, you know, occasionally frustrating, but often brilliant. So we got dot, 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 brilliant. You know, and it was my own fault, and I read it, I was like, yeah, that's on me, and next time I'll have to put parentheses and brackets and make it really difficult to pull something out of this. But yeah, everyone does that, and you're right, if you get the review in the Times or something else, that's it. The thing that I thought was a little bit striking about the premise of the panel to begin with for me is this idea of this sort of asymmetrical relationship, and I'm not sure I buy that for this reason. I think what critics generally try to do, and we've had a chance to talk to people in the speculative fiction community about this. We interviewed Justin Landon from Stafford's Book Review on Speculate and talked to him a little bit about this problem. What critics ought be doing, he thinks, is establishing some context, right, within which we can have a conversation about these works. Not so much, I think this is bad, therefore do not go see it. And maybe that's related to the difference between reviews and criticism, I don't know. Maybe that's the difference there, but that's not really what the critic ought to be doing, he thinks. He thinks what the critic ought to be doing is to establish some sort of context that allows us to have that discussion so that the relationship isn't so much between me writing a critical review and you reading it. It's between you who read this critical review and someone else who read this critical review and can say, hey, Charles Isherwood in the Times said X, Y, and Z about this show, or so-and-so on tour.com said X, Y, and Z about this book. What do you think? And now we have some sort of global sense of what's going on in the discussion, right? Rather than I liked it, I didn't like it, okay, and let's go have dinner. You know, we can have a much more interesting conversation by doing it this way. So I think that's, I guess, my objection to part of the premise is I don't think the relationship exists between those two parts to the degree that the quote seems to suggest. I think the relationship is between the people reading the review, and of course, you can do a bad job writing a review, and you can make it very much a hatchet job opinion piece about how you really hate the person because he looked at you cross-eyed at a party or something, and now you're getting it out on him lo these many years later and, you know, in your review site. But I don't think that's what these are supposed to do, theoretically.
Yeah, I definitely want to come to Lila's.
Well, part of the discussion then becomes not so much the artistic merits or non-merits of the piece, but its significance. That's what, its cultural significance. And terrible things can be culturally significant. Appalling things can be culturally significant. And so that Times placement is what it says. But that's only placement in a certain universe of significance. There are many others. Fortunately, nowadays, we have more matrices to judge things against. You know, so I'm thinking, like Thomas Piketty's book on Capital. I have read probably the total wordage of reviews I've read, they don't total anywhere near the book. But it's a significant book, and so I don't even have to have read it to feel its vibration in the network in which I intellectually exist. So that's what I need to know. It's not, is he right? I've read a variety of descriptions of whether he's right or not. But he's plucked the string in such a way that the entire network is vibrating. Yeah. So it's worth, the reviewers and the critics interacting with that book for that very reason. That's a nonfiction book, but there are fiction books that have that very same effect. And so often you want to know, being a provincial, I live in Boston, so we're permanently provincial, what's moving? What's moving things around? What's the black hole that's got the gravity that's causing other things to alter? It doesn't matter whether I think the black hole is attractive or well-made or anything else. Those are important things, but that's what I feel is often disregarded in discussions about, he revealed the ending or...
Right. I love those metaphors about the string vibrating and so on. I think it's also interesting to think about, the things that have been said, because you can bring that to how sometimes you read a book not because someone has said it's good, but because you want to participate in the conversation that's generated. So maybe we'll keep that in mind as well.
Well, this is interesting to me because I review for two principal locations, and about one of them, film critic Hulk is pretty much right. The Publisher's Weekly gig is about power. The reviews are strictly anonymized. No one is allowed to know what specific books each reviewer does, so that there's this sort of monolithic presentation of the magazine as a whole. Being reviewed in Publishers Weekly at all says something about the state of your career. You could something about the state of your sales. You can tell this when you look and see that there are books where the third or fourth in a series has built up enough momentum that the magazine does it, but the first did not. And then there's the entire starred system, where a starred review in Publishers Weekly is something you write your mother about. That's up there on your list of lifetime achievements. And a Publishers Weekly review is under 200 words long. That can be about 4 to 5 sentences. You're not going to manage to say that much in that length that's actual criticism of the work. You shoehorn in as much as you can, but the point of the review, the fact of the review itself, is far more important than who wrote it, or to some extent what it says. Whereas at Strange Horizons, I get as many words as I want, as long as it's more than 1,500. I get my own byline, and I have comments enabled, so that people who read the review and want to talk about it can interact with me. My guidelines for Strange Horizons say, assume the audience who reads your reviews has read the book and wants to talk about it with you personally. So it fascinates me that these are almost completely opposed purposes.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that what you're touching on here actually is a power differential I'm actually far more interested in discussing than the one between reader and reviewer, is the one between reviewer, reviewed, reader of review, and the access that people have to us as reviewers now, the way that it's assumed that there is a power differential between someone with a high platform or wide platform readership when you're reviewing. This is more power than the author, perhaps, but at the same time, if the author has a wide readership and doesn't like your review and sends all of their readers to go and colonize your comment section and tell you how much they hate you personally, then there's a difference. So it's interesting, there have been so many discussions online about those boundaries between comments as a force, and reader power versus viewer power. So those are other things I'd like to see perhaps discussed a bit. John?
Yeah. Well, quite a few things have been said already. I've got a long few notes here.
Bullshit.
In regard to pull quotes.
With
regard to pull quotes, I think it might be possible for a reviewer to write reviews without pull quotes, and I'd be enormously happy to see if 100% of reviewers actually attempt not to use pull quotes. I think their usefulness is extrinsic to what the review should be doing. It's part of the service industry. as a service industry, which is basically demeaning and dishonest, as we know, as we've already demonstrated. It's very easy to accept with me because I write very carefully, so full quotes are hard to get.
You write carefully around the full quotes.
I sure do. Partly because it's demeaning to be misquoted. Mm-hmm. And it's demeaning for the people who are doing it. It creates a transactional frame, which I'm not really that much interested. I'm not making a lot of money out of reviewing. I'm not doing it to make a lot of money for a production, a stage production, to sell a lot of books. That's not really my business. So that kind of austerity is not a gesture of superiority on my part. There are gestures of superiority, and they should not be limited to me or anybody else my age instead of being superiority just by doing it for a long time. The fact is that the whole premise of whoever this anonymous person is, and you may know who he is, but I don't, and that's significant. What's his name? Film Crit-Hulk. Crit-Hulk. Basically, two things. One, the notion of a power differential in reviewing, as though that in itself was something to remark upon, seems astonishingly Latin and clear thought.
That clear thought.
Astonishingly lacking is clear thought.
Astonishing clear thought.
If you sat down and thought about something, there is a power differential. So suck it up. That's what you're there for. You're not there primarily to have an equal-to-equal conversation with a number of people who don't give squat about you or the thing you're writing about or the way you're writing it, unless you happen to persuade them. And if you're persuading them, you persuade them because you know more than they do, not because you want to talk. It really doesn't do that much good to want to talk. There are these comment fields all over, and Strange Horizons has it. I work for Strange Horizons. I do a piece every 6 or 8 weeks, however often I'm sort of able to. And I don't look at the comment fields. I never look at them. If somebody wants to talk to me, they send me an email. I'm not in a conversation. I am not their equal. They are certainly not mine. Not in this context. I find it basically a kind of assumption of mutual entitlement, which just maybe generationally I just don't find myself that comfortable with. Yeah. I am willing to be told I'm wrong, but I'm not willing to be told I'm wrong in the frame of a conversation which everybody has an equal voice.
That's very interesting to me because you're talking about something that there's kind of that assumption of equality. It's interesting to me that you say that you prefer to be emailed by someone who wants to have a conversation with you, because to me it's...
That's personal, obviously.
Okay,
I can't claim it as a principle. Okay. It'd be nice if we had a couple hours to work up some kind of elaborate way a personal communication by email was an actual part of a conversation, a Western civilization, and a conversation by a comment was the end of the world as we know it.
There's your pull quote. That's pull quote.
I want to really get focused on that because we but I don't think we need.
I see. Okay. Well, a question, like, although I think Lada, did you want to respond to anything before I ask the question?
I wanted to say I think it's interesting because you therefore are filtering your readers, but aren't you? That by the people who are interested in that specifically. Whereas there are reviewers who write to entertain people who have no idea what the work is and they're never going to read it, especially bad reviews.
Yes.
And canning reviews can be funny enough. You know, I've sent something go viral and you get sent, but then, you know, look what this guy said about this restaurant I will never go to.
Can I then, actually, this is a really good launching off point for talking about reviews versus criticism, because I think we all sort of acknowledge generally that it's possible to have what the panel description sort of brings up, reviews as a performance, and whether that's doing the same thing as criticism, and can criticism be its own performance for that matter, and can there be, we've already established there are many different kinds of reviews for different media, but within different media, I think there are also different calibers of reviews. I mean, we're talking about reviews publishers weekly are very different from Strange Horizons. Different review sites have different reviewing cultures, and also they have different implied readerships, don't they? In Publishers Weekly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I always get the sense that we're writing reviews for people who are reading them in catalogs, people who are reading for libraries, people who are reading for schools and things, which is different than reading for the expected readership directly instead of the middleman. So do we want to talk then, you would give your thoughts about reviews versus criticism. Are they A, mutually exclusive, B, in a Venn diagram that's complicated with each other, etc.?
Can I interrupt and say that ReaderCon over the years has established that it's a very, very complex Venn diagram that nobody has ever been able to describe.
We're going to do it here today for the first time. We're going to figure it all out. We're going to untangle every strand.
Just
now, all together.
I was going to say that the context of in which one of these things appears is probably, hey, turned out. I have a name now. The context of one of these things appears is one of the things that determines what its job is, whether the job is more credible or the job is more informative, whether or not you're trying to give a career bump, inform a certain kind of purchasing decision on behalf of a library or whatever, versus the I will go to the store and buy a book, versus the I would like to join a conversation, and all of these things are perfectly awesome in their own context. And then all of the confusion and the rancor comes from going, this is one of the jobs, and I wanted it to do the other one.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem for that is that you have so many things now that are being defined essentially with the same terms that don't really work out the same way. So that the Amazon review is not what we would... let me rephrase. The Amazon review may not always represent all aspects of what authors or readers would hope to find from a thoughtful, considered opinion of that book.
They're
all just
right. Exactly. The performance. There are things like the Free Wolf Moon T-shirt and the notorious gallon of Tuscan milk, which are some of the most hysterical reviews ever created on this earth.
Yeah.
The review of the Book of Random Numbers with the complaint that on page 72 some of the numbers are insufficiently random.
Yes. Well, that goes to show to the extent to which reviewing is like everyone's hot now. You know, so yeah. I don't envy the role of a professional, which is a real thing when everyone thinks they do what you do. And actually my favorite, and I'm kind of raising the bar here because this isn't what I always see, but and there are people in this room who do this for me, who make the review itself makes me the reader for the book, whereas if I had not read the review, I would not be the reader for the book.
Right.
You know, a reviewer who can create the useful matrix in which I can react to the book in a way I otherwise would not, is probably the highest, to me, the highest function of the role.
I found it really interesting how we're already sort of categorizing the things that a review does. You know, if it's useful, if it's performing, performing its function correctly, then it is higher. Whereas if it's transactional in nature, it's lower. And really, like, come to the transactional nature of a review, because I find this really fascinating. And John's already touched on it. The idea that as reviewers, we should sort of be above the commercial concerns of the marketplace. But in some sense, maybe I should say reviewer, should I say critic in this case, do you think?
I wouldn't say above, I would say estranged or removed.
Okay.
And I would suggest in a practical sense that if you just pragmatically sit down and do your best to understand the book and you describe that book within the remit you have, within the page numbers that you have, within your own sense of how you're doing it, you're just as likely to affect a transaction with an audience you can't actually determine in advance, as you are if you sit down assiduously and follow, we must not say anything nasty about this book, we must post, we must this, we must that. It doesn't work. It just makes noise. Most of Amazon is noise. It's not reviewing. It doesn't change anybody's mind unless that person is involved in Amazon and with cadre of people who do the same thing and praise each other, and the whole point of your columns of praise is to basically weigh them.
Well, and it started out, you know, when Amazon first started out, they had a whole series of, you know, everyone could review in the same way. And very quickly you saw, right, these differentiations beginning to come into play. So you have Vine reviewers, and you have specific trusted reviewers, and which is a great term, trusted reviewers, and the top 100s. I know we were ranking reviewers by, I guess they have their own Amazon review page where they get reviewed. You know, and we were breaking all of these things down, which to me is sort of a cry, in a way, for finding someone that you can actually, who rises above the white noise for you a little bit, who can again provide that context, which I would still maintain is what reviewers ought to be doing. I think if you provide to provide a context, this matrix that you talked about, this idea that you have this way that we have now, you've given people tools to be able to discuss work in a meaningful way, presumably with each other, maybe with you, depending on your opinions about comment sections, but at least to be able to provide some way that they can have this discussion with each other. And that's why I do object to people who say, get rid of all the critics and the reviewers are useless and da-da-da-da-da, because it means that we're losing this sense of not just whether that particular work is worth actually reading, but whether we ought to look at this field as a whole, right? How do we figure out the way the field is moving in a particular direction, and whether steampunk indicates X, Y, and Z about the way the field is going, if we don't have these discussions? Where do the discussions come from then, if they're not being provided in this way where you have someone who observes something and says, this is what I have observed about this based upon education and training and all these other sorts of things, and it gives people a sense, not to say I agree with them because they are trained and educated per se, but to say, I need to think about it because if so-and-so said this, it's got to at least be something I need to take a look at. That's incredibly valuable, I think, for the field.
Well, and that's interesting too, because that makes it very noteworthy that the panel statement about the power differential comes from someone called Film Crit Hulk.
Hulk.
who is an anonymous person, yeah, whose website has become famous not because of being in a magazine, although I think they've been picked up as a column by a publication at this point, but through a repeated anonymous shtick over Twitter and in longer reviews.
Yeah.
This is a person who may be perceiving this power differential as a gatekeeping way of saying, all right, I cannot sell my reviews to get them vindicated by professionals as worthy of seeing an audience. Here is how I'm going to do this and build my audience anyway. Yeah. And so it doesn't surprise me that that person sees that power differential as a problem. They're on the wrong side of it for what they want to be doing.
Hmm. You might say somebody who's anonymous is using power differentials as illegitimate in any case. Because
I agree.
An anonymous review, like many other forums of reviews from, say, Publisher Weekly, represent the voice of whatever is being said. They don't represent someone saying that. They don't represent the transaction of dialogue. They don't represent an argument. They represent an impersonal voice. It's something which, of course, is a generational thing. As someone of a generation prior to a generation which thinks it's okay to have a fake name and to say whatever you want about anybody under cover of that name, I'm much, much less likely to read an anonymous or an anonymized review than one that is actually signed. Which means that there is an arguer.
But may I suggest, though,
we have that argument.
Do you think that it's possible, though, I'd like to know your view on this, do you think it's possible that being anonymous actually corrects the power differential sometimes?
I think it increases.
Well, may I continue to follow?
Sorry.
If someone already feels like their position in society, for instance, is marginalized or under attack, or, for instance, given how many, just for example, women on the internet engage in reviews under their own name of, video games or books and so on, and receive all kinds of absolutely astonishing abuse into their emails, which is why I brought up the email thing earlier, where if they have their emails accessible and so on, they receive horrendous abuse, rape threats, threats of like giving up their home addresses, things like that, then having an anonymous name protects them purely because the fact of their being a woman on the internet expressing her opinion might set some abuse.
That's certainly a very clear and very coherent issue. Is it an issue with relation to what we're talking about at this time?
Well,
that's really the problem.
Right.
That if you are, it seems to be something which I don't think I have prepared my head to think about this evening, but it does seem to me that it may not be the most efficacious way of, as it were, representing a solution to those clear problems and desperately obvious problems when they get exposed by using anonymized presentations. It does a certain task. It does a certain task of protection and deflection. But it doesn't do the positive task that we're talking about this evening. So there are two issues here, and how they are to be coordinated in the future as we evolve and as more and more ways of being visible and being invisible and being assaulted for who you are or who it is assume you are. That I don't think I don't think anybody here is going to be able to say very coherently how the conversation that we're having now is going to be as it were profitably addressed.
Well, I only have to say, you were saying that you didn't feel like a person, if they had a thinking, could have the same sense of bringing their background to bear on their review. If I apologize for my comment.
An implied background.
Okay.
If there isn't, obviously, but no reviewer writes something, you know who the reviewer is, and that's part of your response to that review. And if you know this anonymous person by what that person he or she has written, you know that. But I think there is for a lot of us a real gap there.
I see.
That it is a very sorry substitute for the real man.
I see. So this is interesting. What I wanted to bring that to is the idea of responding to the brand of someone's review. Because clearly, I mean, Film Critic Hulk has their brand of reviewing, which people either like or don't like, or find useful or are not useful, and so on. But maybe I'll just throw this to the rest of you, actually. I realize you're suddenly having this conversation here. What do you think about this, about having an anonymous, either being anonymous or having a fake name and so on? How does that affect your reading of those reviews? And have any of you ever done this? Have you ever written under another name?
I've written a review of a non-existent book under another name.
Really? You better tell more about that.
Because I could not be bothered to write the entire book. So the author had my two middle names, and I excised all of the things I was worried about getting right in the novel as the sort of most cliched forms of self-aggrandizing criticism I could possibly squeeze into the thing, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to get it right if I tried. It's then much shorter to write a review. So there wasn't really a power differential, except that I screwed up because I put my name on the review, and the character writing the review was a jerk. And I should have done it the other way around.
You know, that's either the most hilarious mistake or the cleverest excuse for having been really, really mean in a review. What's the character I was playing?
The skip book was great.
You skipped the middleman without writing the book, you just created the review of the book.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should all just stick with that, because it certainly would save us all a lot of time.
Review
readers
con.
And writers.
Review con, right? That's just all we do.
It's a Borges story.
Well, here's a thing about anonymous, if I had written an anonymous review, obviously I wouldn't tell you, but I'm not a reviewer by inclination. But I've always noted, and this is a thing in our field, and I think in other fields as well. You know, John's like hang out with us, but he's physically present in our community. You know, it's hard to get. So, is there? I could see where someone would say, "Well, I will review anonymously, so that my personal relationships with the writer is not the issue." I always wonder how, because it's a tight community, and I always wonder, well, there's all these writer reviewers, which a hybrid that I find a dangerous one, you know, because if you're out there contending in the field, but at the same time, I don't know what, you can tell me what compromises you feel might come up where you can't honestly say what you think, because, well, I'm going to be having dinner with this guy tomorrow, you know.
No, it's sometimes a really shitty position to be in, but I've written stuff about this. Yacked on about it years and years ago, and on about the fact that if you are in a field like this where everybody knows everybody, if you're in a field like this whose conversation is complicated and exposed, if you're in a field like this where everything you say is, as it were, vibrates within the field, even if you're an unimportant person writing for 500 people or fewer, it is damaging to tell an untruth. It's damaging generally, but very, very specifically.
within this field. It is toxic, and it's sometimes very painful. I have reviewed negatively people that I know and love. I do it all the time. And I have to fight against being more severe with people I know and love than with those who are complete strangers. And you work it out. You rewrite the review, so you cut out that kind of stuff that implies knowledge of secret sins. But you have to try to. You have to. It is just toxic not to. And I think it's a terrible sin that when people refuse to review people they know in a field where most people know most people, you end up having a clan mate.
I'm actually.
And it really kind of smells to high.
I'm actually not allowed to review my friends for NPR. It breaks my heart because, I've become friends with people because they're amazing writers, and I can't review their books. So I have to sort of stop becoming friends with people in order to
If you're a writer and she's friendly to you, forget it.
Yeah,
just give up
your
career and move on,
So that is another form of implicit bad review.
Right. The friendlier she is, the worse your writing.
Right.
there also is a point at which I think you have to recuse yourself if you were involved in the book. I review work by friends all the time, but I will back out of something where I read it in an early draft.
Right.
I mean, come on.
You've got a relationship with the book as a fashion.
I gave him a great suggestion and he didn't take it, and his book sucks.
I've never reviewed a book I've had anything to do with before publication. I think I think it's probably a different issue. Because it's impossible for you as a critic to actually understand that book as others necessarily have.
Yeah, coming to it for the first time. Yeah.
So there are a couple more things I'd like to comment. Well, first of all, talking of negative reviews. Has everyone here read the now famous Christopher Priest review of that book that I can't even remember the name of because the reviews are completely eclipsed? have you all read the review that I'm...
I don't know that I have.
No. Which occasion of Christopher Priest was this? Because there are two I'm thinking of.
Oh, the one most recent. To me, was review. I think it was an ARC. ARC magazine, was it?
Is it Barricade or Mirage?
That... review of what sounded like a dystopian Britain future.
Yeah, something like that.
Why did Christopher Priest, the author, who written that review on this as a subject matter?
Yeah. Right. So, if no one's read any more comments on it, I just thought it was certainly in the corners of the internet that I frequent. It sort of there was a great deal of commentary about whether or not he'd been too mean, or whether we needed more of that kind, specifically of negative criticism, because it was clearly very honest. You've got a question, we'll come to it in a little bit perhaps. But anyways, we'll move on to that, maybe let the questions come later. I want to come back to comments for a moment, because I want to come back to the idea of this asymmetry in reviews. And one thing I'd like to put out there is there a degree to which we can look at comments as reviews of our reviews? I know that John's, I suspect I know John's feelings on this matter. but I'm curious, because your initial response, John, when you were talking about slightly common fields completely, and understand...
That's a lie.
Okay. this is not meant to be in contradiction to what you're saying. But it's only to ask, because I ask myself this quite a lot. Your initial response was, comments will not be coming from people who are as engaged in the subject as you were, they're not on the same level as you as a critic.
Well, they can't be because they haven't read the book.
But my question is, could they have, or in the case of a book that has come out already where people have read it, or where there is more of a discussion happening, can we read comments, and should we read comments, as reviews of our reviews? And in that case, do you feel that there is an ethics of engagement? The ethics of reviewing and engaging with reviews is something I think about a huge amount, to the point where I'm trying to just crystallize the beginnings of my thought on it, but I'd love to hear yours, and how you feel about responding to the responses to your reviews, and is there a point at which, because we're obviously authors of our own reviews, and there's a huge debate on whether authors should respond to reviews or not, and so
right.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm dating somebody I met through a comment section.
So presumably this is a positive thing that you can see happening.
Yes, and
so far.
So wait, so she, was this someone who left a comment on a review of yours?
Yes, the way I started in reviewing was that I had a blog, and I decided to do a project where I could read 365 books in 1 year, a book a day, and write a review of them each day, and this I did, and the blog is up there, and I got regular readers, people who dropped by every day, and some of them would have read the book, some of them wouldn't, it depends on what book it was, and I met several of my longtime readers after the year was over, because they were in various areas. I still correspond with some of them because they miss the daily nature of it, and I'm dating one of them.
But part of that presumably was them responding to kind of the awesomeness in every sense of the word of the project as a whole, right? I mean, part of it was just them dropping by and going, I am amazed that you continue to write articulately about this work, right? I assume it wasn't just, we're waiting for you to review, you know, book 125. That was the one that I wanted to get to, you know what I mean? I mean, I would assume it's, is that fair to say? Like, I mean, it's...
Sort of. People would send me, I would get boxes of books in the mail from people who would be like, could you please read and review this?
3 months from now when you would actually get to... I mean, I have to say I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea that comments are reviews of my review. And I guess the reason is that I think, and this is what concerns me about the notion of review as performance art, I don't think it ought to be about reviewers. Like, I hope that's just a sort of basic statement. I think reviewers ought to get the hell out of the way. I think the reviewer needs to provide context. I think the reviewer needs to provide a forum for the discussion, and not just, here's a book I read, what do you think, but providing an educated forum, a forum that's shaped. I try to do the same thing in my classrooms, which are very discussion-oriented, but they're discussion-oriented starting with a framework that I provide. If it were simply a matter of, we all get together and sit in a circle and, you know, talk about Dostoevsky, nothing would get done, because they haven't studied him. You know, they don't know some of the sort of discussions that have gone on before they arrived, and that's part of my job, is to provide them that environment. So that, I think, is what a reviewer does. But at the point where a reviewer starts going back and forth with comments and starts getting into a discussion about it in that regard, and it becomes, well, why did you think this about what I said about the other thing? Forget about how far into the looking glass that takes us. It also means that we're in an environment where all of a sudden we've become the story. I am not the story. Charles Isherwood in the Times is not the story. These people are not the story. They have a persona, which I think you're referring to, John, that people know about that allows them to understand this is the sort of thing Isherwood will write. This is what Justin Landon on Staffer's Book Review will be likely to say about an epic fantasy that's this, that, and the other. So they have a persona, but that doesn't make it about them, and they are more important than their review of Anne Leckie or their review of N.K. Jemisin or the review of one of these other people. And I'm very uncomfortable about going down that road, especially since I'm a writer. I'm happy to have you talk about my work all day long, but I don't want to have to be also, by the way, have you heard about the review of someone else's book? Let's talk about my review. And the poor author is going, wait, hello? You know, I'm the one who actually wrote the book in the first place. That does make me a little bit uncomfortable, and I'm not sure that we ought to go down that road.
It's this sort of hierarchy implied, like there's the book, and then there's the review of the book, and then there's the review of the review, and then there's the conversations that you have on Twitter about the review,
yeah.
And then there's the offhand comments that you have, and it has this very sort of top-down feeling, which brings with it this sort of, like, 19th century romantic notion of the art as the perfect object that exists, and is the effluent of the creative, that was a weird word, of the artistic mind, and, like, is this perfect emanation that we should all be talking about and looking at in this way, and not saying, well, all of these things are strings of words, or other things as well, emoji, small whales. And then it exists in a sort of horizontal way, which doesn't say you shouldn't focus on whatever you want to focus on, but it lets you back off from this notion of trying to plug everything into itself in this bizarrely hierarchical way. I think the book was nice, I think the review was stupid, I think that comment was smart, and I'm moving on with my day, because honestly, I have a job.
And for the reviewer to engage in that, to me, for the reviewer to engage in that is basically the reviewer leaping in front of the thing and kind of going, you know, like this, photobombing, if you will, the review, when, you know, you've lost the point of the review, which is the work being reviewed, and I think the works that I review deserve their own attention, not my review of it, per se.
Okay. We just got the 5-minute mark, so...
Yeah, two things. One, how reviewers respond to comments. I think somebody already implied it. A reviewer should probably respond to comments in the same way that an author should reply to comments. The only way that an author should respond
find a comment at all is if there is a factual error. If there is something factual to be correct at all. And if you have to do it very, very carefully, else you're going to have your neck bitten off.
I'm not a cool
saver. The same thing I think is probably with reviewers. The other thing is that I'm afraid I don't entirely agree with the ideal, in an ideal world, it might be ideal. The ideal of the reviewer is being essentially transparent to the work being reviewed. We none of us can do it. Some of us are more visible than others, but that's just the accident of who we are and who we are. But the fact is that we're in a field in which very, very few texts are even remotely autonomous. And to actually review, this gets into what we're actually trying to talk about when we're reviewing criticism, which was another panel, but really when we're reviewing in this field, after all the years this field has existed, and the various fields that like make Venn diagrams around each other or within each other, when we're doing that, we are necessarily, unless we're incompetent, we have to relate what that particular non-autonomous book, despite our desire for PR, we don't have to get that there.
I agree with that, but the focus still...
We have to relate that, and to relate that, there is somebody speaking. That person speaking may well be flagging down this train that thinks it's on tracks, but is actually, as it were, lost the rails.
My apologies, John, I'm going to cut you off.
Yes.
I
just want to talk a bit more.
Yes, question there.
Is a review meant to do anything other than make a yes or no recommendation? Should you read this? Don't bother.
Absolutely, a review should be more than
that. Absolutely, it should.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The movie reviews that I see on the PATH train every morning on the way to work that I can't hear anything about, and just a guy mouthing things, and then at the end, he either does this or that. That's the only thing he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Well,
but that's just one guy.
In my ideal world, a review will tell you whether you want to consume whether you want to read the book, regardless of whether the reviewer thinks you should.
Right.
There will be enough there for you to understand, okay, this movie reviewer hates everything I love.
Yeah.
If they hate it, I should go see it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Just the idea of context and bringing it instead of part of the context.
Yeah.
I think every reviewer should bring is their context, the context from which they're writing the review. I mean, if I, as a reviewer, am allergic to a certain thing in books, then and some of them are truly ludicrous, then putting that out there and saying, you know, this is my thing. Anyways, but another question?
Well, that's why I read 2-star reviews on Amazon. I find those the most... The 1-star reviews are, this book is too long, it was boring...
They didn't ship it to me
the
right.
The characters weren't realistic. The 2-star people hate it for a reason. And you should...
I have 2-star reviews, I'm extremely...
Right, sick. So those are, to me, are the index of...
Bad reviews are sort of violently uncomfortable to read, and I would imagine to write. That's my biggest fear of reviewing, if I were to review. Do you enjoy writing bad reviews?
Oh, negative reviews.
Oh, he's shocked. He's shocked.
Okay.
He already disappointed me.
Let's go with that. Who wants to lean in here?
I immediately had this notion you meant bad reviews. I'd be uncomfortable writing terrible ones, you know, just like badly written ones. Like, well, I don't know. No, I'll tell you why. I don't think negative reviews may be uncomfortable if you sense that what you're being negative about was sort of the core of what the person was trying to address, and they somehow got it wrong in your view, in the reviewer's view, in my view. Those are uncomfortable to write in the sense that I go, I know what you're going for, you missed the mark here. That's uncomfortable because you're striking at the soul of what it is they provided in the first place, in my view. But for the most part, most negative reviews are not about that. Most negative reviews are about things, they're the execution went off, or the vision they had was blurred by X, Y, and Z. And I'm not uncomfortable about that if I can present it in a constructive way. And I will say that there are reviews that I have seen, that these hatchet job reviews, that are intended to harm, if you will. I disagree violently, if you will, with that sort of a review, because I do think that the power differential that does exist is that people do look at reviews with a certain level of authority, and that means that you have an obligation not to destroy for the sake of destruction, but to bring, it's again, some kind of constructive context to what's happening, even if that's negative. So it depends on how it's done, I guess, is the sort of short version of that.
All right, and on that note, I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop. It's been super fascinating, and I'd like to thank all of you so much for participating. We get a round of applause for our